Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Welcome to the UK Tech Weekly Podcast, the UK's premier audio block vote, spreading audio fear and audio loathing every Friday. The UK Tech Weekly Podcast is an infotainment hanging chad from the editors of PC Advisor, Techworld, Macworld UK and Computerworld UK. You can find us on Acast, on SoundCloud, on iTunes and plenty of other places. Every Friday we head to an audio hustings, making a series of ill-thought-out audio promises, making impossible audio pledges to disparate audio special interest groups in order to bring you no more than 40 minutes of informed tech chat on the hot tech topics of the past seven days. Do not forget to subscribe, review and tell your friends. I'm Matt Egan, Editorial Director of IDG UK, and today I'm delighted to be joined in conversation by the President of Podcasts, Chris Martin, Consumer Tech Editor of PC Advisor.
All right.
The leader of the House of Chat, Christopher Manassians, the staff writer of Macworld UK.
Hello.
And the defeated and subsequently unheard of vice presidential candidate, Scott Carey, online editor of Techworld.
Hello.
This week we are talking Donald Daydreams and the bank where every little helps. Everything will be fine in the end. And if it isn't fine now, it just means it's not the end. Don't you forget about me. Don. Don't you forget about me. Christopher Manassians.
Yes.
It's the end of the world as we know it. Or it's not. It's a brave new dawn. What the hell's going on in the States? And what does it mean for tech?
Well, as some of you might know, Donald Trump has been elected as the president of the
United States.
What? Nice thinking there. But yeah, so it's actually raised a lot of questions in terms of political views, but it's actually quite interesting in terms of a tech point of view.
Sure.
What happens with the tech industry with Donald Trump at the head of, well, the head of the chair, shall we say, or in the US, controlling...
Head of the free world. Let's say head of the
free world. Free world in inverted commas, yeah. and yeah, it's just really intriguing because we've got Silicon Valley, and that's some of the biggest companies in the world are over there. And more specifically, at least in terms of like a Mac perspective, for me, it's going to be Apple. Or even, you know, you could put in Amazon.
So what do we know about what Donald Trump's policies or views are on tech, and how much impact does that actually have on tech?
So the good question is, what policies? That is the major question, because Donald Trump doesn't actually have any firm policies on it, but he has mentioned certain things that do raise questions for US-based companies who trade on an international level. More specifically, he is against the H-1B visa, which essentially allows people to work in the US for US-based companies but internationally based. Essentially, he wants to make America great again, and therefore wants people to be employing US-based citizens.
So do we know, are there a lot, so you're talking about foreign nationals working for US tech companies in the US?
Exactly
Off the top of my head, I can immediately think of a few people I know who are in that situation. So are there a lot of these people?
I don't know in terms of the numbers, like in terms of how many millions or, I don't know,
no.
how many people are there, but.
But I mean, like, if you go to any tech event, yeah. the first thing they always say is how difficult it is to find talented, skilled technical staff, and how they generally have to look abroad. And you, I mean, You don't have to look past the CEO level of Silicon Valley to see people that are not US born. Sundar,
Google, yeah.
Satya Nadella was born in India. The CEO of Microsoft.
Well, India produces the best techies in the world now.
Yeah,
it?
And the founder of WhatsApp was born and raised in Soviet Ukraine.
Is Sundar? Is he a US national? Because Satya is, isn't he now?
Yeah, I'm not sure about Sundar actually.
Okay,
I'm sure at this point he is.
I mean, is the suggestion that these people will not be welcome in the US anymore? Or is it just that people they won't be able to be recruited into the US?
It's going to be much harder. Like when I was, if you look into terms of like working in the US, you already first need sponsorship as it is from the company.
So if, say, for instance, any of us was to go work in our US office, which does happen, as long as the IDG, our employer, sponsor us, it's actually pretty trivial to do.
Exactly.
Because of bilateral agreement with the UK and the US.
Exactly.
But I think this is more for hiring sort of external, skilled sort of coders or developers.
Yeah.
So the Eastern European bloc produces lots of really, really talented coders. Historically and Russia and getting those sort of people into the US on like a lower level will be extremely difficult because you can't sponsor them in that way. So Donald Trump has said that he wants, you know, these companies to hire more US citizens for these roles, but as most people in the tech industry know, that it's not as simple as that. They just aren't. Well,
it's fascinating, isn't it? Because I was thinking this the other day, walking around our own fair streets. You know, education in this country is actually a massive revenue generator from an economic point of view. So the number of foreign students within a stone's throw of the office we're sitting in right now is huge.
Mm.
And they're subsidising high-level education in subjects like technology for UK people because they're paying to come into our country, and the same is true in the US on a massive scale.
Yeah.
So I just wonder how this would impact on that as well, because, you know, for people like Sundar Pichai, the, you know, his life story is incredible, but he was the guy who was the best in his class, which meant that he got to go to university, and then he was the best in his university class, which then meant he got to go to the States to study, and then because he was the best of the best of the best, he got to be the CEO of Google.
Yeah, and Satya Nadella's life story is extremely similar. He did a very similar thing where he was educated in the US and worked his way up because he was just so talented.
These people went to education in the US because they felt they could get a job in the US at the end of it. So that's the kind of employment side of it, and it'd be interesting to see whether the president actually can do anything like that, because there's lots of checks and balances in place. What about technology in general? Is there any suggestion of lawmaking around the use of tech?
Well, for me, actually, the interesting thing is it comes down to, in terms of consumer point of view, it comes down to price. So if you've got more expensive workforce, naturally your produce...
Fortunately, the dollar is plummeting off a cliff. So
it is indeed, but that, it still does raise the question, as in, does that mean Apple can... not shall I say no longer manufacture things in China, but does it mean it has to bring more things back into the US? Does it have to, even though it's got loads of intellectual property in the US, does that mean its production has to come to the US, or a certain bit of it has to come to the US?
One of the few things that Trump has been outright on when it comes to technology is Apple. He has specifically gone after Apple and said that they should be producing their products in the United States, and it's not just labor, it's also the cost of importing.
So you'd have to ship in raw materials.
Yeah. And then build it. And I think I saw the other day a lowball estimate is that a completely US-made iPhone would cost an extra $100.
Yeah.
And it's already a pretty expensive piece.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because Apple itself plays this game. Because if you're in the States and they're advertising things like iPads, the ads at the end of it always say, designed in California, and they have made play in the past of assembling bits of products in California.
Yeah, it's funny, if you go to Canada, the Budweiser adverts are the same, but the opposite. So it says brewed in Canada. Like, that's a big buying decision.
Like at the end of the Carlsberg ads where they say the Danes hate to see it go brewed in Northampton.
But yeah, it does raise the question. It does bring a lot of interesting points, more for the consumer point and even for the business point of view. Like, business-to-business relations, how they're going to change. Does, let's say, I don't know if they still do, let's say Samsung are providing parts to Apple, are they going to have to ship them over to the US? I mean, the thing is, I think his term is 4 years, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep. Right? Yeah. Yep.
So how much change can he actually implement to these companies?
Not
in
a great
4 years?
Deal, typically. I mean, because Republicans have both houses, certainly in terms of fiscal policy, they can do a lot of stuff. So that would be interesting. They could, you know, taxes can be cut and things like that.
Yeah.
He will come out of NAFTA as well, won't he?
Yeah, I would think so.
Which will have an impact on foreign phone makers in terms of selling into the US market.
Interesting.
Because he's already said that he wants to put a 45% tariff on any imported Chinese goods. So the likes of Huawei are probably not excited about that.
Exactly.
We'll see how that goes, though, because China has a lot of interest in the States and the US has a lot of Chinese debt. So how easy it will be for him to do that.
I think he doesn't understand it, to be honest.
Yeah.
He doesn't really know about it. He just says, let's just do this. Doesn't really think about
it. He'll try his best.
What about the big beasts of Silicon Valley? How are they reacting to this result? Because it is, you know, it is a, whether you like or dislike Donald Trump, it is a shaking up of the political norms.
Yeah, they're really sad.
Well, like the whole of the West Coast was
for
Hillary, right?
Yeah. California. Well, both coasts were overwhelmingly Democrat.
Yeah, both coasts.
But no, they are. They're really sad about it. A few people have like collated Silicon Valley tweets in response, and a lot of them will sort of wrap it up in a "we push forward" and you know we're positive and we will implement change and yada yada. But in general, yeah, I mean they're pretty down on the whole thing. Having sort of someone going from someone who's so pro-innovation, so smart, so engaged with the tech community as Obama to someone who doesn't understand technology in any way, it has to be a bit of a downer.
Mm. He's going to probably get his, like, his son, like, 10 years old.
Yeah.
He
blows
gonna,
my mind. He hasn't
he's going to get he's going to get advice on tech and cyber from him. It seems.
Yeah, cybersecurity.
He's got a laptop, and he knows how to use it.
Yeah, the New York Times said it's like talking to your tech illiterate grandfather, which is pretty apt.
Doesn't he think that the US invented the internet?
I think he said that. Yeah,
he said we made the internet.
Yeah,
and we're getting beaten at it.
They were involved in making the internet.
Yeah. In terms of sort of actual sort of Silicon Valley heads, PHY, as we said earlier, has been outspoken against Trump. So has Benioff at Salesforce. And then Zuckerberg's a really funny one because his lead investor, Peter Thiel, is like the only person in Silicon Valley who has been supportive of Trump. So he has to kind of be a little bit careful. And then the really interesting one is Jeff Bezos at Amazon, because they have quite a public beef, because Bezos owns the Washington Post, which have investigated Trump's tax and things like that. So they've been going head to head. And the way that Trump will try and get at Bezos will be with corporation tax. And it'll be really interesting to see if he starts trying to get the Googles, the Apples and the Amazons to pay more than the 0.1% corporation tax they pay at the moment.
Well, that wouldn't be a terrible thing, would it?
Absolutely not. I mean, if there is a silver lining, it would be nice to see him actually go a bit harder on that.
Interesting personality clash, that, because Bezos is the anti-Trump in that he's all business and no flash.
Yeah.
You know, their offices are famously run down and cheap, and it's all about building a business that makes margins rather than showing power and wealth and success.
Yeah.
Whereas Trump has successfully ruined several businesses but manages to sort of maintain a profile, which actually in its own way in a country like the States does keep you afloat. Kind of.
Well, yeah, he flies around in a literal gold plane. So he doesn't get much more on the nose than that.
Yeah. Okay, final question. Are there any sort of privacy issues around this? The US is pretty much, as a government, it's in the pockets of its subject citizens. Sorry, their citizens, they were subjects. But yet Trump would sort of position himself as a libertarian, but I can't help but feel he probably would quite like to have lots of data on his citizens.
Snowden's comment on this is genuinely one of the more terrifying things I've ever heard, is when he said basically any president that comes in has the ability to quite easily get access to everything the NSA has on people, and he called it a turnkey tyranny.
Right.
Which terrifies me.
Well, the good news is that we are even worse than the States. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get onto that with the breach.
And I, for one, welcome our new leader. Good. Okay, let's quickly go around the room. You've been trumped or take a ticket to Trumpton. Scott Carey.
You've been trumped.
Christopher Manassian.
You've been trumped.
Chris Martin.
You've been trumped.
That is a fairly clear... Take that, Donald.
We managed to keep that quite polite, actually.
Yeah, and techie.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's good. All right, we'll take a short gap, and when we come back, we'll talk about something much happier.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cheer up, Chris Martin. Oh, what could it mean to a daydream believer and a homecoming queen? Chris Martin, are you a daydream believer?
I am. And excellent. I'll tell you why.
This is great podcasting.
So this week, Google has launched its new VR headset. And it's kind of an evolution of the cardboard one, which was just made of cardboard. And so it's one that you put your phone in. It's not like the HTC Vive
or... So like the Samsung VR?
Similar to the Samsung VR. Probably that's its closest rival. So that one you put your Samsung phone in, obviously. And this new one you can put lots of phones in, or you will be able to anyway. So it's a more... finished headset, if that's the right word.
Yeah.
It's more of a kind of...
Because cardboard was like willfully Heath Robinson, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You cut it out. And...
Yeah, and it had Velcro on it, and it was all a bit basic, but that was kind of the idea. And
Even the Samsung one where you can like see the phone on the front looks quite basic, so they've kind of covered it up on
You
this
can
one.
Cover it up on the Samsung. It's got like a plastic cover that clips on over. But yeah, I think you can just about see the phone through that. So this one's, it looks really nice. It's made of fabric, or it's got a fabric coating anyway. And it's got a plastic core, so it's nice and light. Comes in some really nice colours. And you slot your phone in the front, but it's not got quite the support of the cardboard yet, because you need a daydream, compatible phone. And there are basically only two at the moment, and that would be Google's own Pixel phones.
Yeah.
So they're the only ones that will work with it at the moment, but there are lots more coming.
So you've got a Google Pixel phone, say. Let's just imagine that.
Yeah.
How much does the Daydream then cost you?
The actual headset is only £69.
Okay.
And it came out yesterday. So obviously that's pretty cheap compared to something like the Vive, which is like £600.
How does it compare in terms of content or games or...?
So the content is a lot less at the moment.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why you can't use... I don't think you can use anything that you could use on cardboard. You can't just use on Daydream.
Right.
It's a different app. It's a different set of content.
So they're reliant on games makers or experience makers creating content specifically for Daydream.
Yeah, I think so.
You can do 3D YouTube.
Yeah, you can do YouTube. I think there's Netflix, or if that's coming at least.
Yeah.
There's a few little kind of mini games and stuff at the moment. I mean, we've got a review sample, but it only arrived yesterday and I wasn't here. So I haven't actually used it.
Yeah.
I haven't actually used it properly since the Google event,
yeah.
Which I just had a quick go on lots of different things. One of the main things people will be excited about is the Fantastic Beasts experience, which they've, you know, teamed up with JK Rowling for.
Very important to say Rowling there, in case people thought it was JK from Jamiroquai.
Yeah.
It's a very different experience.
Yeah, that would be an interesting one. So, yeah, at the moment, there's just the Pixel and the Pixel XL that you can use with the headset. But they did say that there would be at least some more by the end of the year, including Huawei. But they Huawei just launched the Mate 9,
right?
Which they didn't mention anything about Daydream support. So that was a bit weird. But hopefully there'll be some more soon.
I missed the chance to make a virtual insanity joke there.
You did. You certainly did.
we've done that before.
So this is interesting because you kind of feel like they would need, if this is going to be mass market, maybe that's not the intention, but it would need the support of people who make experiences and games, which in return probably needs a lot of people to have the device, which needs a lot of phones to be compatible with the device.
Yeah.
What's Google hoping to achieve here?
I don't know, to be honest. I guess we'll find out. But yeah, the lack of support is a bit of an issue when you could basically use anything in cardboard. Yeah. But you've got to have a Daydream compatible phone. I don't even know what the requirements are for a Daydream compatible phone. I mean, it connects. It's obviously it's using the phone, but it connects to the headset wirelessly.
Right.
So yeah, and via NFC. So when you, it's quite a nice experience because when you slot it in the front and put the front back on to hold the phone in, it all just automatically does everything because the NFC chip detects that the phone's there, launches the Daydream app. So when you know, by the time you get around to putting the headset on, it's all there, ready to go. So you don't need to like faff around opening the app, then putting the phone in and stuff. And one of the major differences compared to like the Gear VR or a lot of other headsets is that it comes with a controller, which is wireless. So it's just like a tiny little TV remote. And that's kind of like a Wii remote. So it's got, you know, motion sensors and gyroscopes. So you can, it gives you a mouse pointer in the, you know, in the app. And it just makes it a lot easier to use because you've got that in. You don't have to look at something for a length of time so that it knows you're trying to load that thing.
Yeah.
And in like, In stuff like Fantastic Beasts, it's your wand, so it just kind of gives you that really nice.
Sounds pretty cool.
VR,
and it almost sounds a bit sort of Wii-like in the sense that maybe this is the kind of more accessible, more kind of social. I don't want to say lower because that's pejorative, but let's say lower end of the market kind of fun games rather than hardcore serious gaming.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's much more casual than the Vive or the PlayStation VR, which is
priced as such, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
It does sound like a bit of a wait and see at this point. I don't think I'll be rushing out to buy it because you never know if the price is going to come down as it sort of improves.
Well, you never know Google as well because the nature of Google's kind of everything's a beta approach is they do occasionally throw these things out. Like sometimes with the, like we talked about this the other week, with the Nexus phones, it was to make a market for Android and it worked. But then we don't really understand why they're making the Pixel phone now. It sort of doesn't make any sense. And then they throw this out. It could be that Google really intends, because Google's talked often in the past about AR being hugely important to it. So maybe it's part of that they're trying to build this kind of mass of people who are looking at Google devices and seeing the world through them. Or maybe it's just a thing that someone made and they think it's quite cool, so they've stuck it out there just to see what happens.
Yeah.
The thing for me is that when do people actually use that? So I've got a headset myself. It's just like one of those cardboard-esque ones, except it's just like a full plastic one. It was super cheap, came on Amazon. But I've hardly used it. It's just sat under my bed
the most
of the time because you think of when are people actually going to put their phone in to their VR headset in order to watch VR content, which is already few and far between, in my opinion, even on YouTube. Like, even cardboard 3D, 360 videos on YouTube are actually quite rare to find. Not rare, but they're not that common. I'm just trying to think, like, someone gets home, puts this headset on, and then sits in their room looking at a video or playing one game or two games on a single phone. It just, and then on top of that, you've got the price, which is, well, as you said, like, what, 60, 70 quid. It just doesn't make sense to me. Like, why would someone ever do that?
It needs the content spot, doesn't it?
It needs
a compelling game, say, or two.
It needs something that will actually drive people to do it, because as far as I can see, like, the Vive and the Oculus, they've got their market. Those are the hardcore gamers that really want to play, and they're going to set up a room for it.
And the PlayStation.
And the PlayStation,
VR,
yeah.
Has got PlayStation users, and as we've discussed previously, although it's not cheap, it's a relatively affordable extension if you're a PlayStation gamer.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas this is kind of...
I think the Daydream View is kind of aimed at people interested in VR, maybe never used it before, and just are intrigued as to what it's like. And if they've got a Pixel phone, or eventually a phone that happens to be Daydream capable, 69 quid isn't that much to spend.
It's not an outrageous amount of money, is it?
And it's a nice looking product, so you're getting quite good value there.
And there are strategic goals for Google there, because if it means people are consuming VR content from YouTube, that's a good thing for Google. Yeah. And as I say, they have talked often over a period of many years about augmented reality and how that's kind of the future of search. And they want you basically to be walking down the road looking for one of these headsets, ordering coffees with your eyes in a weird dystopian future world.
I mean, whether or not people then use them, like you say, like, you know, a lot or every day, or, you know, I don't know, it is a bit of a novelty still, I think. Yeah. But, you know, it hinges a lot on the content, as we've already said. So
wait and
I
see.
Guess we'll see.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Let's go around the room. I'll see you in my daydreams, or in space, no one can hear you daydream. Scott Carey.
In space, no one can hear you daydream.
Christopher Manassians.
Let's go gravity.
Okay. Chris Martin.
I'll see you in my daydreams.
Lovely
that,
stuff.
Lovely. The first one?
Yeah. I like a split boat. Cool. Not all split boats. We'll take a very short break. And when we come back, we'll be talking about Tesco Bank. Thank you very much for the Aintree Iron. Thank you very much. Thank you very, very, very much. Scott Carey, why would we be better off carrying our money around in stripy plastic bags?
It's a very good question. Tesco Bank, the bank from everyone's favourite supermarket, was subject to a huge breach of security this week. The biggest of any bank in the UK, and also it's pretty much on the same scale as the huge TalkTalk customer breach, which happened last year. Essentially, you would have been better off just putting your money under your mattress.
So is Tesco Bank an actual thing, or is it a white labeled version of another bank?
No, so it was a 50-50 venture between RBS and Tesco,
right,
the supermarket chain, back in 97, but then Tesco bought out RBS after the financial crash,
right?
So it is wholly a part of Tesco PLC. It's just another of their many revenue streams.
And how do we know how this happened? Is it something they did wrong? Or?
So not yet. Many sort of security experts are saying that a breach of this scale means that it probably has to have come somewhere from an internal issue,
dun, dun,
or
dun,
a breach via their mobile application, which is less secure.
Right.
But this is a really nice early challenge for the new National Cybersecurity Centre, which we spoke about a couple of weeks ago, which has been set up. This will be their first big sort of project. And what they'll do is they'll work with Tesco Bank to work out where the breach came from. They will go after anyone responsible and try and prosecute. Their new thing is to be really, really open about this sort of thing. So hopefully we'll, as a public,
find out,
and then they'll try and ease concerns around this, because this has huge implications for any bank that isn't the big four.
Right.
Because just natural lack of trust here.
Of course.
Switching over to a bank like Tesco Bank requires a little bit of a leap of faith. And then when you have to worry about them not being as secure as the banks that have, you know, millions and millions to throw at this. That has to be a huge concern.
So if I was a Tesco Bank customer, what would I have experienced?
So it was only a small amount of the actual customers which had money taken from them. So I think the breach was something like 130,000 current accounts were breached, but only 9,000 accounts had money taken out. But of those 9,000 accounts, £2.5 million were stolen.
Bloody hell.
Tesco Bank immediately reimbursed all 9,000 of those customers.
Right.
Naturally.
So is that going to cost Tesco £2.5 million?
That's going to cost them £2.5 million, unless they can somehow manage to claw it back, which they generally don't.
Money spill in aisle seven. Money spill in aisle seven.
What is really troubling for Tesco Bank is that GDPR now really comes down heavily on anyone that gets breached in this way.
Yeah, bet.
And they are currently looking down the barrel of a £2 billion fine for this data breach. Considering that Tesco Bank only makes £1 billion in revenue every year, that could floor them.
Could finish it off, yeah.
Wow.
Basically, I think Tesco would have to, at some point, decide whether they want to close it or
away to another bank, I suppose.
Yeah, or try and use their other revenues to dig it out. But I'm not sure at this point, with the lack of trust and the reputational damage, that it's a venture that they'll sort of go forward with.
Wow. So if I'm a customer of Tesco Bank, should I be doing anything right now?
If I was a customer of Tesco Bank, I'd probably switch.
Since you say that, though, because it's unlikely they're going to get done twice, isn't it? I mean, you would think that they would, I don't know, this is probably me just being an optimist, but if you're, it's like if someone makes a mistake that costs you £1 million, you just paid £1 million to learn a lesson.
Mm.
I don't know.
You would think that, and obviously they will be behind the scenes. They'll be doing absolutely everything they can to try and patch this up and to try and secure themselves in the future. Mm. The problem is that sort of cybersecurity isn't that simple.
Yeah,
and you patch one thing, but you're still sort of addled with vulnerabilities.
Just get a copy of Norton, lads. Come on.
So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how the cybersecurity center reacts and if it gives them some advice. But I think it's the trust issue here. Like, if I was with Tesco Bank, it's going to cost me nothing to switch my account. I think I'd just switch.
Yeah, well, and the other banks will be sniffing around, won't they?
Absolutely.
So is this a new bank, old bank thing? Can we trust the new banks?
I think that absolutely not. Like, the old banks are no more secure than the new banks, just because they've got more money to throw at cybersecurity. The problem is the changing landscape of cybersecurity means that they've got these big sort of firewalls up, but they've got, you know, huge amounts of legacy infrastructure. They've got mobile applications,
legacy code all over the place.
So they are all addled with vulnerabilities. It's just the big banks have slightly more resource to try and, like,
they've got that big old scary looking horse as well, haven't they? Which would scare off.
They have, which would scare off sort of physical combatants.
Yeah.
But I think the real challenger banks, the real digital first guys like the Atom banks or the Monzo banks, they know how important this is for them. They know that if they were to have a breach, that would pretty much floor them overnight.
Well, and I suppose, unlike, as you described, Tesco, which was kind of hived off from RBS, those guys are building their banks from the ground up. So they're building their tech from the ground up. We discussed this before, didn't we? They're like, one of them, I think maybe it was Mondo, has actually bought Off the Peg software, but
Atom, the other way. So Atom bought Off the Peg, right. Monzo built theirs from the ground up.
Yeah, but either way, it's sort of starting with a clean, secure system.
Yeah, you make sure that everything you build is as secure as possible for, like, modern attacks. Whereas the other guys are generally trying to sort of patch up the aeroplane while it's in the air.
There's just one thing, though. You were just saying about if it would happen again, and would you keep your money in Tesco Bank? Hackers are out there to prove a point often. Mm. Like, with PlayStation, I think they hacked it several times, and Xbox, and they did it several times just because they were like, you still haven't patched it up.
They see a vulnerability and they go after it. That's exactly what they do.
Exactly. So it'd be interesting to see if Tesco, as you said, would survive, but let alone these other banks.
Yeah.
If they'll now be going after other banks, going, oh, these guys got hacked, and other big hacker groups come across and go, we can do that too. We want to prove a point too.
It's an interesting point in terms of where finance and government meet as well, going back to the original conversation, is, you know, where does responsibility lie as well? And this is the sort of thing that's very difficult for governments to regulate because they don't understand it.
Yeah.
For a start.
And they sort of bring down these huge draconian fines to try and force the banks to take this sort of stuff really seriously. But I still don't think they really are. I think the telco's got a real big sort of shot in the arm with the tall thing, and they realise that they had to bulk up. And this might do the same thing for a lot of the smaller banks. They might think, okay, we really have to do something about this now.
Well, yeah, because I mean, it was a small part of it, but one of the things that happened that led us into the financial crisis of 2007-2008 was that it was cheaper for banks giving credit to just not worry about security to an extent, and certainly to not worry about knowing the identity of the people to whom they were giving credit, because they were making so much money. It was the real sort of metric of success was how quickly can we get credit to a person, rather than how secure are we.
Well, yeah, 2.5 million wouldn't have worried them a huge amount. No. It's the reputational damage and now the fines that really put them off.
Okay. Interesting times. Let's quickly go around the room then. Thank you very much, or what a bunch of bankers. Scott Carey.
What a bunch of bankers.
Chris Manassian.
What a bunch of bankers.
Chris Martin.
What a bunch of bankers.
That's very much a consensus on Tesco Bank being a bunch of bankers. Thank you for listening to this edition of the UK Tech Weekly podcast. Do get in touch to let us know your thoughts and opinions and to shake us down for cash, or indeed if you are interested in advertising. You can tweet us at UK Tech Podcast or email editor@idg.co.uk. And we will be back next week, presuming the world still exists, with more informed opinion on the hottest topics in tech. So until then, don't forget to subscribe, review us, and tell your friends. And until then, say goodbye, guys.
Thanks, guys.
See Bye.
You. UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.